So last week we talked about Choresh, right? That was part one. And Ritz Hashem, we'll do part two. My goal, I don't know if it's too much. Well, I guess we'll have to see. My goal is to cover a few things tonight. One is the Dirabanans surrounding Choresh, right? We learned the Daraisas. There are a few Dirabanans and extensions by the rabbis when it comes to Choresh. And more particularly, there's a general rule, what we call Psik Resha, which we've referenced a few times, the inevitable result, inevitable consequence. And much of that stems, or it's an opportunity to talk about during Choresh, when we talk about the idea of plowing and dragging a bench and the like. So I thought this would be a great opportunity to actually understand what a Psik Resha is and why it should be that when there's an inevitable consequence, why should it be that that is still something that is on me if I had no intention for it? So those are my two goals tonight. We'll start with the Psik Resha because it's fun. It's just such a fundamental idea and we keep saying over and over and over, so I want to understand it together. And then, hopefully, it's Hashem, there'll be time, and we'll circle back and apply it and also understand the a few extensions of Choresh. Now, even before we do that, right, okay, I guess it's three parts, because just to review last week, and that is last week we defined Choresh, right? What is plowing? Plowing is, by definition, something that is for the purpose of growth afterwards, right? It has to be Choresh al-Tzarech Zriya, or L'Tzarech Zoreya, that it's Choresh plowing for the purposes of then seeding and planting. And we defined it, was it the idea of loosening the ground? Is it the idea of preparing the ground, making it a better, more fertile place for growing? Whichever one, we basically take both, and we extended that. I want to make one correction. And that is last week, Richard, you noted, why should it be that if something was there before Shabbos and then you pull it out, so why is that Choresh, right? You didn't do anything. It just, you pulled it out and there's a hole, right? You're correct. I was incorrect. There's a Gemara in Shabbos, which says so, that if you have something in the ground before Shabbos and you pull it out on Shabbos, without like trying to move it back and forth and the like, widening the hole, if a person just were to pluck it out, so to say, I'm not suggesting we do that on Shabbos because there are the other issues. Do you pluck it out right out properly or not? But even so, the idea is, you're right, that's not making a hole on Shabbos. So that's not a problem. So what was the case that we were talking about the sand falling in and the like? The case was that you were trying to put in a candle or something like that. You're shifting it to try to get into the ground so that you want it to be able to stay. And if you're doing that in sand, then it's not a problem because when you take it out, the sand just fills right in. So I just wanted to make that correction. That was a great point. You were correct. And good. So that was last week. Mm-hmm. And now let's go on to the topics for this week, unless you have a follow-up question.
Well, you know, it just sometimes things just pop into your mind a week later.
Right.
I mean, my business is going to court. You have no idea how many times I've finished up what I had to say, and I think to myself, why didn't I say that?
Right, okay.
So let's assume that you're digging a trench.
Yes.
Okay? But you're not digging it for planting purposes. Let's say
right.
you're digging it because you want to pour concrete into it.
Right.
For a foundation. Would that be prohibited?
Yes. Yeah, so ultimately, we still go into the definition of Choresh. And there is a discussion. Is it, do you go based on the action or do you go based on the intention? And that's a machlokas in the Gemara, discussion in the Gemara. But ultimately, if it's a place that is fitting for planting afterwards, a place that would have the ability to plant because of that, so it's still something that's one is liable for. Now, if you said you were digging it for the dirt and not for the purposes of actually having a hole, then that gets into a whole discussion more similar to Psik Resha, in which we'll kind of get into soon. So let's start off with just the third question. We'll start off with the third question. We'll do Psik Resha.
On the third question,
yeah.
Could you also talk about what's the difference between this case opening a fridge and if on a freezing cold day you open your door and the draft immediately will cause the heat to click on in your house because you're opening the door, which then sets
yeah.
the
yeah, yeah, yeah. We'll hopefully.
We were discussing that.
Yeah, we did that a few weeks ago, right? So no, but we'll try to.
Let me tell you, from my perspective, it's always a good question.
Right. No. So we'll readdress that. We'll revisit that. I will admit with Psik Resha, I guess it depends on where we go down with this. I'm happy to spend more time on Psik Resha today and we'll table the first or second part of of Choresh for next week. But let's see where we get with Psik Reisha. We'll see how far into the application we get. My first intention, my first thought was really to discuss it from a theoretical, a standpoint of just being able to understand the concept. But we'll see how far we take to applying it. So let's just go to question three first, okay? So question three on the first side, if when opening the fridge, it's inevitable that the light will go on, why should that be a problem if I have zero intention for the light to be lit, right? All I'm doing is an action to opening a door. The Torah never prohibited opening a door, right? Now it happens to be by opening that, inevitably so, and I know the light is on in the fridge, inevitably so the light is going to go on. So what's the problem with that, right? It really, in anything that I could talk about in Shabbos, if I do one action and inevitably so another action is going to occur, why should that be a problem if that's not my intention? That's not what I care about, right? Why should that be a problem? Okay? So that's what we would call a psi reisha, inevitable consequence. And that's not a perfect translation, and we'll understand what the translation is in a second. So let's go to the back side, side two, page two. So there's a Gemara in Shabbos directly related to Choresh, right? Now, again, this halacha, psik reisha, the inevitable consequences, with intention, without intention, all of this is very broad. It's very far-reaching, not just within the rules and the confines of Shabbos, but throughout all of halacha. It happens to be that this is a great place to bring it up. So we know that when it comes to malacha on Shabbos, when it comes to work on Shabbos, when it comes to these actions that are forbidden, they both have to be productive and purposeful, right? Meleches machsheves asra Torah. The Torah forbade purposeful, productive actions. So what that means is when you have something that isn't purposefully productive, so it doesn't fall within those categories. So what is that? So in source one, the Gemara in Shabbos says as follows. Rav Shimon Omer, Rav Shimon teaches us, Gorer Adam Kisei Mita Vesafsal, that Rav Shimon says you can drag both a bench, a bed, a chair, provided that you don't have intention to make a furrow, right? Imagine I'm dragging this very heavy table, or even a chair. I'm dragging this chair. It's not so heavy. And as I drag it, my pure goal is to get it from this side of the yard to the other side of the yard. It happens to be, it also might make a furrow. So Rav Shimon says it's permissible to do that, provided that I'm not trying to make a furrow. I'm just trying to move it from point A to point B, right? That's Rav Shimon's understanding. And that's what I would call, one second, I'm sorry. That's what I would call, or what halacha calls, a davar she'eno miskaven. The act of the furrow is an act that I'm not intending for. I'm not thinking about that. The fact that I drag it from this side to that side of the yard, I just want it over there. The fact that it makes a furrow is a davar she'eno miskaven, is something I have no intention for, right? And Rav Shimon says something that I have no intention for, meaning the result. I'm doing one action of dragging from one side to the other. There's another action happening, which is the furrowing. I don't care about that. So Rav Shimon said that's okay. Okay?
That's inconsistent with what we learned this week.
Good, good. So we're going to get to this.
Same question as Richard. Last week we were saying about a woman's high heels. She's not walking on a soft ground in order to sink her.
Good, good.
You want the opposite.
Actually,
yes.
We have the wagon.
Well, the wagon is compression. So
you could use the wagon, but you couldn't drag other stuff.
Heavier things. Good. Okay, this is a great question. Well, essentially you're asking is, but we have many other cases that we're saying you're doing one action, but another action is occurring. And in those cases, we say it's okay. So what's the difference? Okay, so look at source two, right? Let's go in order. That's a great question. That's what everyone asks. There's so many Gemaras that ask that. There's so many Gemaras that there are cases where you do one action and then the other action, or there's another result. There's another action occurring, and Rav Shimon should say it's okay, right? And yet the Gemara assumes it's not okay. So one such example, which is not brought down in the Gemara, but what you're talking about, for example, is stepping like the heel or dragging things that you know are going to make a furrow, that you know. So the Gemara presumes those to be a problem. But according to Rav Shimon, what we just said, that's not a problem. I'm just trying to get from point A to point B. I'm just trying to walk in my heels. The fact that there's another action occurring at the same exact time, my wife is just trying to walk in her heels, right? The fact that I'm getting, the fact that something else is happening at the same time, who cares? That's what Rav Shimon says. But we say, of course we care, So what? How do we fix that? How do we deal with that contradiction? So the Gemara in Shabbos says, Abaye v'Rava, in source 2, Abaye v'Rava, de'amri tarvayhu, mo de'reshimam b'psik reisha v'le yamus. That when it comes to a psik reisha v'le yamus, Reshimon agrees. Now what's a psik reisha v'le yamus? We just said, Reshimon holds, anytime I do one action and there's another action that could occur, don't, it's fine. That's called a Devar Sheino Miskaven. I have no intention for that other action. If there's something that's inevitable, inevitably going to happen, even Rosh Shimon agrees that's a problem. That's what he calls a psik resha v'layamos. Now let's translate what that means.
Is psik related to psak?
So psik means essentially a cutting, a severing. It's Aramaic. A psik resha v'layamos. It's a question as if you're going to cut off the head and the animal won't die. Rashi explains in source 3, I'll say it outside, the case is as follows. Imagine like this, a child needs a toy. So in the olden days, what do you play? Apparently with the head of a chicken. Okay, leave all questions on the side about that. Let's not get sidelined. My child needs a toy on Shabbos. What are you going to play with? Oh boy, I take a chicken, I shecht it, there you go. No problem. Of course it's a problem. Well, Rav Shimon says, we would maybe say Rav Shimon says it's not a problem. Why? Because I'm just trying to cut to make a toy. The fact that the animal dies, which is forbidden on Shabbos, you can't kill something, I don't care about that. I have no intention for that. Of course, Rav Shimon agrees that's a problem because it's inevitable. At the very action of trying to make a toy, of cutting, an inevitable result happens, which is killing. Killing is forbidden on Shabbos. So, a psik resha v'layamos means you cut off the head and inevitably it's going to die. So, what that translates to is, anytime I do an action and there's an inevitable result, it's 100% or near 100% going to happen, even Rav Shimon would say it's a problem. Rav Shimon who said, if I drag the bench, I don't care about the furrowing, so it's okay. He would agree when it's inevitable that something's going to happen, I care, and of course it's not okay. Does that make sense so far? Okay. So, by the way, if you think of a psik resha v'layamos, meaning a psik resha, we're from now on, psik resha, even though it means cutting off the head, what the colloquial or halakhic terminology, what it means is inevitable result, right? So anytime we have a psik resha, an inevitable result, it's a problem. We just translate it as Rashi said, it's the case, and the Rambam, I think, understands it's the case where you shech the chicken, you cut off its head to make the toy, but inevitably it's going to die. Killing something on Shabbos is forbidden. It's weird because that's not really two actions. It's just one action with you want a toy and it's also dead. That's kind of different than dragging something that I want, that I'm doing an action of caring and also doing an action of furrowing. So some others, interestingly, and we're not going to go down this route to get into the details, just to have it out there. The Sefer Aruch comments, what are you talking about? That's not the case. The case of when we say psik resha, you're cutting off the head, and won't it die? It's inevitable. He says the quintessential case is where someone kills someone else because out of protection or they need the blood. Whatever the case is over there, you're trying to get the blood or you're trying to protect yourself, and there's also a result of killing. Just realize such an opinion is out there to solve any other solve questions that would have been on this chicken case. That's just a fascinating insight and side point. But let's go back here. So now, in the inevitable result of psik resha, even Rav Shimon agrees it's a problem. Now, why? Why would Rav Shimon say when something is not inevitable, it's okay? And by the way, we hold like Rav Shimon. If I do something and it's not inevitable that something else will happen, so then it's okay. But if I do one action and action B is inevitable, then it's a problem. We say it's 100% a problem. Now, what's the logic here? Ultimately, if I do an action, I do not care for that result. Forget care, not care, even if I did. I'm not thinking about that, right? I don't care about that. Like our fridge case, I open up the door. That's all I'm doing. I care to open up the door. The light went on. Okay, so what? Why does that matter, right? Especially when it comes to the Torah, when it comes to Shabbos, intention matters. It has to be purposeful. It has to be productive. This doesn't relate to me. My intention had nothing to do with that, right? So what's going on? This is an awesome, and this is a theoretical point in the sense that we're just trying to understand the background, but realize that what we're talking about here makes up so much of the laws of Shabbos, so much of Hilchos Shabbos. So this question is such a big question on a psik ratio. We talk about the inevitable result. So what inevitable? That's not what I was doing. So why do we care? There's an awesome approach by Rav Elchanan. Rav Elchanan Wasserman, just to give a basic, quick background, Rav Elchanan Wasserman was a Rosh Yeshiva in Europe before the war. He, a towering giant in Torah. His Torah was proliferated even before his death. He was murdered by the Nazis. And the whole story goes is that in 1937, I believe, he was in America raising funds for his yeshiva. His yeshiva was in Europe. And, I'm blanking, to be honest. I forgot which yeshiva. But it was, 300 Talmid, it was a large yeshiva. He moved around to a few until he became the Rosh Yeshiva of this particular one. And war broke out, and they told him it wasn't safe to go back to Europe. If you go back, you're risking your life. But he went back anyway because he said he wasn't going to leave his Talmidim, he wasn't going to leave his students alone. So he was with his students when they were all marched to their death by the Nazis, and they were murdered. And there's an eyewitness account that was told over, and it's passed down. It's in the introduction to one of his his writings, is that as his students and his son was amongst them as they were being led out to be murdered by the Nazis. So he told every single one of them that we're going to die al kiddush Hashem, we're going to die for the sake of heaven right now, and that we're going to go and we're going to sanctify Hashem's name, and we're going to make ourselves like korbanos. We're going to be like sacrifices. So everyone should do tshuva now. And that's how they marched together, going to their deaths by the Nazis. A towering giant in Torah, and he's made his mark. He's made his mark on Torah. It's his Torahs are learned throughout yeshivas everywhere. So he, unbelievable. So you'll see how just the genius behind the following suggestion. He says as follows: why does it matter about an inevitable result? Why should that matter? Everything's about intention when it comes to Shabbos. The intention, the focus, the malachas machshavas, the purposeful, productive action. So he suggests you can understand psik ratio, an inevitable consequence, in two different ways. One, and this is in source 4, but I'll say this outside. For anyone who's listening, or if anyone wants to look at it later, I'm happy to even read it inside later. It's phenomenal. He suggests that one that you could say is that when I do action A and action B is inevitable, so, and it happens to be I like action B, so you can't tell me that you don't intend for that action. If I know that action B is going to happen, if I do action A, and I know, for example, let's say the refrigerator, I open up the fridge, that's action A, and action B is I know the light is inevitably going to turn on. So can you really tell me you didn't intend for that, especially if it's a favorable result? Can you really divorce your intention from there? That's hard, because it's inevitably going to happen. You can't ignore the fact. So ultimately what we say is it's very likely, we look at it as that too was your intention. So our first question was inevitable result, who cares? The answer is, if it's inevitable, we say you care. Yes? Yes. So if it's lo nichale, if I don't care for the result, so this answer would explain. So if it's an inevitable result that I don't care for, so maybe it shouldn't be a problem. Yes. That would be according to this understanding. The other way he says you can understand psik ratio is that when you have two actions that are so tied together that when you do one, the other one happens, we just look at them as one action together. Haba hatalia, they're completely dependent on each other. And it's not about the intention. It's just that if you're doing this action, it's essentially you're doing both actions. So that doesn't depend on what, if it's favorable or not, right? So the difference between these two approaches is the first approach would say, we essentially are saying you have intention for the second result, right? You can't tell me I don't have intention if it's a favorable result. It's inevitable and it's favorable. So whereas the second way of looking at this is just you're doing one action. The inevitable consequence, we just look at it as all one action. And the difference between them is the second approach, it doesn't matter if it's favorable or not. That's how Rav Elchanan basically frames the psik ratio and frames perhaps the difference if the psik ratio is favorable or if it's unfavorable. So that's the background. Now this is far-reaching consequences, actually. But one second. Is that clear so far? Okay, fantastic. It just... fundamental idea to understanding Pesukei Kriyas Shema. Of course, there are different approaches, but I find the way Rabbi Hanan formulates is awesome. The actual case that he's coming from is a Nazir. A Nazir is not allowed to cut their hair, right? Until they finish out their days, and then they go to the Beis HaMikdash and they bring the sacrifice, right? So, but a Nazir is not allowed to cut his hair. So can he comb his hair? Well, when you comb your hair, it pulls out hair. So there's a whole discussion. Again, this is not limited to the laws of Shabbos. There's a whole discussion of, can he comb his hair? Is it inevitable that the hair will be pulled out? And if it's inevitable, then a Nazir can't comb his hair because it's pulling out hair. Yes?
That raises the question.
I misspoke. It's the idea of, yes.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah, correct. It's the idea of removing the hair. I misspoke, yes. As I was speaking, I was thinking, oh, good. Yes. The hair removal would be forbidden by the Nazir.
But it says cutting.
The language of Sorek Distrika Hipsik Resha, my understanding is, and I could be, but my understanding is cutting, but the idea is the removal of hair, ultimately. And I think there's some other examples, like what if a person put a salve that takes the hair out. We can talk about this after, but just realize, again, the inevitable result goes across Shas, across all other cases. And the beauty of it is because in all of Torah we care about intention. In all of Torah we do care about intention in certain cases, and we care about your action. So this how Rav Hanan is learning it really is far-reaching. Now, just to talk about again, where are some how does this come up? So this obviously comes up when we're talking about opening a fridge, and there's an inevitable result. When it comes to opening up the house, and then the air conditioning goes on, so inevitable might be the case, but it happens through a passage of time or a series of steps that we would look at as grumma, as causational. So that's another factor that you can have a psik resha that is also grumma. And that gets into a whole nother world. See, it's fascinating. When it comes to halacha in general, and specifically on Shabbos, you can add together multiple aspects to have different results. Meaning I can have grumma, causational. Well, it's also inevitable. And it's also not favorable. And you can add all these things together and they end up with different rulings. But that would be the difference between opening up the fridge and the light immediately turns on, whereas when you open up your door to your house and then eventually the air conditioning will respond, right? You could look at it as an inevitable result, but through grumma, through causation. Another interesting factor is when it comes to asking a non-Jew to do something. We know on Shabbos, Amir LeNachri, that you can't just ask a non-Jew to do anything. And there are limited cases where it's appropriate and how. And if I, and again, this is not, do not take this as a halachic decision right now. We're talking just generalities to be able to understand these concepts. A non-Jew, if I tell them to open up the fridge and the light is on, that's technically not a problem. Again, I'm not talking about halacha right now, but if I had the option, if that was my only fridge, so, and that's where all my Shabbos food is, so I can go to the non-Jew and say, hey, can you open up my fridge? Now it's fascinating. I'm not really telling the non-Jew to do a forbidden action, because what I'm telling him to do is just open up the fridge. What inevitably happens? The light bulb. A non-Jew is not forbidden in Shabbos. So the whole idea of connecting intention, making the intention for one thing mean that there's also intention for the second thing, none of this has any bearing on a non-Jew, because we care about intention when it comes to Shabbos, and that's how we plug these two actions together. But for the non-Jew, all he's doing is one thing. Oh, the fact that light turns on, a psik resha, inevitable consequence, has no bearing on that. Especially because I'm not telling him to do that, by the way. I'm only telling him to open up the fridge. The fact that there's an inevitable thing, a psik resha, so what? I didn't tell him to do something forbidden. Right? Yes?
I thought that when you're doing this, you're supposed to A, ask, and B, hint at it and not say it.
Yeah, I'm not talking. Yes. And there are multiple cases. Whatever I just said and whatever we're saying now, do not take as a halachic, you know, decisive, you know, decision, psak. This is all just to highlight the idea of a psik resha, that I'm just telling him to do something. It happens to be inevitable. Now, I can't do that, nor could I tell a non-Jew to do something that I can't do. But in this case, all I'm doing is telling him to open up the door. Inevitably, something will happen, but Psik Reisha has nothing to do with the Jew, with the non-Jew. Okay, so that's all the world of Psik Reisha, and I just wanted to be able to bring that up. One, that we understand the concept, but two, understand how fundamental it is to general halacha. From now on, we're going to use this term, and we have been using it, about Psik Reisha, the inevitable result, and we understand that ultimately that inevitable result is going to be tied to you. Now, it does sometimes make a difference. Well, did I care for the inevitable result? Was it favorable or not? Even if it's not favorable, we still hold there's an Isser Durabana. It's still a problem. Meaning, I could open up the fridge all I want and close my eyes. It's not favorable. I can't see. That's a problem, right? There is someone who said, okay, don't do that.
So, Rabbi, yes. The word Sikresha, we're defining as the inevitable result.
Right. Now, the actual translation is the cutting off of the head, which means an inevitable result of death. But yes, it is the, yes. Okay. So anyway, so I wanted to bring that out to one, to be able to understand how that has bearing on what we do, and also just to, a fascinating insight into that world of halacha, when we say a psik ratio, about how much thought process and how much we have to understand behind it. You know, now when we throw out that term, there's a certain understanding of it. Okay. So that wasn't so bad as far as time. Good. Okay. Any questions on Psik Reisha? I'll just end on this one topic as follows. So what we said, Davar She'enu Miskaven, an unintended result that I don't really care for, that's okay. So an example would be dragging a chair that's not heavy. It's not certain at all that it'll make that'll furrow the ground. So that's fine. Because since it's not certain, we can't say, oh, you must have had intention for it. Or because it's not certain, we can't say, oh, it's all one action, right? It has to be certain. Because if it's certain, so then we tie your intention, or we say it's all one action. So when it's not certain that something will happen, so then we say that's okay. When it's for sure going to happen, a psik reisha, that's when we say it's a problem. If it's favorable to you, a favorable result, so then that's biblically a d'oraisa. If it's a non-favorable, you don't care for it, so we still say it's a problem. But we can, that together with other factors, multiple factors, can be applied.
So if I drag this heavy item across my backyard and it makes a furrow, but I don't want a furrow because I want a perfectly smooth backyard, that's not a problem.
Oh, it's a problem. It's what we would call as a psik reisha, de lo nichale, that you don't care for it.
Something that I don't want.
But it might still be forbidden d'oraisa in your backyard because it happens to be good for growing, but at the very best, it would still be a derabanan. Even a psik reisha with an unfavorable result is always forbidden mi derabanan. So it's never okay. It's just a question of, am I dealing derabanan or derabanan? Right? A psik reisha is always a problem. If I care for the result and it's a good result, it's a problem on a derabanan level, biblical. If I don't care for the result, it's still a problem. It's just derabanan, not just it, but yeah. Okay, is that all clear? Is anything confusing? Is that good?
Okay. Yeah.
Great.
Got the point.
Great. Okay, fantastic. All right. Thank you, Rav Elchanan. Okay, so I think we can do this in 10 minutes. It would be, we want to get to other malachos, and Choresh, I think we can do in two. So let's go back to our first two questions, okay? And by the way, I'm very happy to further discuss this, even read the Rav Elchanan inside. If anyone is very interested, and has ideas of other practical questions they would want to explore with Psik Reisha, we can have another shiur. But for now, we'll go on to the rest of this shiur. So back to the world of Choresh, directly the world of Choresh and plowing, and applying it to some practical cases. So the question one and two are as follows. One, we usually have a lot of guests on Shabbos, so the dining room floor is pretty dirty after each meal. Am I allowed to sweep up if the mess really bothers me? Am I allowed to sweep on Shabbos? Right? Am I allowed to sweep my dining room floor? Okay, so I see a lot of nods. I'm going to take that as a yes. Everyone thinks it's okay?
The question is, can you use, let's say, a broom that's made out of straw?
Oh, good. So you know, okay, good. So we can get to the types, and most of us don't have straw brooms, and even if they do, they probably don't break. But good question. Yes. We'll get to that particular point. But the idea of sweeping, can I sweep? Good. Second, yes.
I would say yes. When I think of the Malacha, I think of creative work. And I don't know how sweeping is creative work.
Okay.
So,
well, let's say a regular broom. Yeah, okay, good. It's a good question. How is this creative at all? Yes, good question. Now, two, a similar nature question we'll see. Shabbos afternoons, my 10-year-old son plays soccer with his friends in our backyard. We don't do much lawn care, so most of the yard is just dirt with some patches of grass. Should I encourage them to play something else? Right? They're playing soccer in a muddy, dirty backyard. There's some grass. Should they play a different sport? Should I encourage them to play something else on Shabbos? Yeah, so basically, can they play soccer out back? Okay. Now, I just want to preface this. We are going to be looking at sports from a halach purview of the issues here. I don't want to get into, so to say, the hashgafic perspectives. It very much, there are some direct halachic issues and where it has bearing. But as far as a hashgafic level, I think that's very individualistic to some degree. And I don't want to put out something that said, well, always a problem and this and that. So we can talk about it at a later point or individually. But let's understand. So now, there's a Gemara in Shabbos in source one that says as follows. Hamechabed v'hamarabetz. And this is on side one, page one in source one. That if someone sweeps or sprinkles water in their house, so essentially it's a problem. And it's a problem midoraisa, meaning you're punishable from the Torah. You have to bring a sacrifice for doing so. And the Chachamim say, Echad zeh ve'echad zeh ein el mishum shvas. It's only a derabbanan. It's only a rabbinic decree of sweeping on Shabbos and sprinkling water. The idea of sprinkling would be to keep the dust down. They used to have dirt floors. And if you're walking around and it's all dry, so there's dust in your room and dirt in your room. So the rabbis come along and say, no, it's only rabbinic. It's not biblical. A Mamar Shara Zilcha B'Mechuzah. And a Mamar actually allowed people to sprinkle water in a town of Mechuzah. And he said, why did the rabbi say it was a problem? Because if a person does it, maybe they'll come to fill in holes. Hacha like a gumos. But in our town, we have paved we have proper floors. So we're not worried about coming to fill in holes, leveling ground. Now we learned last week, leveling ground is a problem of Choresh, right? Leveling ground, making it nice. So if a person comes to sweep, or if they come to sprinkle water on a dirt floor, there's a problem of you might actually be leveling the ground, right? Sweeping, that levels, it fills in holes, that divots that might be there, or it actually, it smooths down mounds that might be there. And the same with water. It's very possible that both could be effectively either filling in divots or lowering mounds and piles of dirt. So the rabbi said it's a problem. Now, why did they think it's not d'oraisa? Because it's not for sure going to happen. They were worried that if you're sweeping and going back and forth, it could come to happen, right? So they said, because of that, because you're not actually digging, you're not actually filling in mounds or filling in holes, it's not actually d'oraisa, but there's a rabbinic decree to avoid coming to filling in holes, okay? So now, what's the problem with sweeping? So one we just said could be the idea of by doing it, it actually causes, it actually might eventually cause filling in of holes. Rashi even goes so far as to say it's a psik resha. It's inevitable it's going to happen. If you're sweeping, there's a hole right there, the dirt. Again, they had dirt floors. See, so Rashi essentially qualifies and thinks that it would be a psik resha. I like that we can use the term now. It's great. The Mordechai says it's muksa, dirt is muksa, so you're sweeping it. There's another concern, maybe you'll actually come to dig. Another concern, and again, these are all just different answers they give to what the concern is. Another one given by the Smag is that a person will be sweeping and they'll get so involved in cleaning that they'll see a hole and they'll fill it in. Not that they'll sweep it, but they'll actually fill it in. Now, you might roll your eyes, but I get it. I really get it. You know, when I'm in cleaning mode, that no one wants to be near me because cleaning mode is cleaning mode. And you know, it's almost, my brain shuts off. It might be because I'm listening to music or a shir, but my brain shuts off and I'm putting that. I can imagine sweeping furiously, trying to do it fast, and all of a sudden I see a hole. Oh, that doesn't belong there, and quickly patch it up with dirt. Such a thing totally could happen. I can't say I've ever patched up a floor with dirt before, but I don't have a dirt floor. But understandingly, that's the nature of a human. We get so involved with this that might happen. These are all possible concerns and therefore possible reasons for the rabbis to forbid sweeping. Okay. And again, we don't have time to read these sources inside. The Mishnah Berurah in source 2 suggests a few of these reasons. He brings them down. One, that you're moving dust. It's muksa. You might be filling in holes. You might be so bothered that you might actually come to fill in holes purposefully so. All of those exist. And for that reason, sweeping would be a problem. Certainly on a dirt floor. Now the question is, we don't have dirt floors. Right? None of that, of any of the reasons I just said, except for maybe the muksa if there's dirt on your floor, but even then it's dirt and gross and there's permissibility when it comes to gross things and dirt and all on your floor to clean it. And you're not really dealing, you're sweeping it, so you're not really touching it. All that being said, none of these reasons should apply on my wooden floor in my house, right? So is there a problem? So the Shulchan Aruch says, in source three, you're not allowed to sweep your house unless you have a tiled or paved or whatever type floor, a finished floor. And then he says, then some say even if it's not tiled, it would be okay. The Beis Yosef isn't so, he's citing some opinions, aren't so impressed by these concerns, right? Now it happens to be what the Shulchan Aruch is not concerned for is he thinks if you sweep in your regular paved, regular finished floors, you're not going to come to sweep non-finished floors. The Ramah, and this is the Ashkenazi understanding, comes from a Sefer HaTruma, which is cited in the Hagos Maimonides. It goes back that there's a gzera, right? There's a decree on the books, and it's as follows. It's for sure not okay from the Gemara, as we see, for all the multiple reasons that it could be to sweep a floor, a dirt floor. Now, what happens if I start sweeping my tiled or wooden floor? I'll get so used to doing that next thing I know, I'll sweep a non-tiled floor, a dirt floor. So because one could very easily lead to the other, right? Half of, you know, this side of my house is tiled, this side is not. So it's forbidden to sweep even a tiled floor, even a finished floor. That is only true in a place where majority of houses are not tiled. But if majority of houses and majority of places are tiled and finished and floored, that concern falls away. So we live in a world, and which is what, by the way, a Maimar allowed that in his town. The majority of houses in his town were tiled. He wasn't concerned for it. So in the world we live in, majority of houses are indeed tiled. They're floored. They're not a problem. So that extension, that gzera, that decree, shouldn't apply in our town, shouldn't apply in our areas, right? So our homes are okay to sweep. Because the halakha is I'm not allowed to sweep a dirt floor, but I'm allowed to sweep that which is merutzah, that which is tiled or floored. And I'm not worried if I sweep the floor, I'll come to sweep a dirt floor, because we don't live in a world where some houses are floored, some aren't. So really, there's a limited application in that sense. It could come up if someone wants to know if they can sweep their patio, right? Or your deck or something like that. So a deck I'm not so bothered by, because a deck is off the ground and there's not as much of a concern as maybe you could say it's an extension of the house. I think decks would be okay. But when it comes to a patio or a driveway, so what about that? So are majority places paved? Are majority of patios paved such that I shouldn't worry about coming to then sweep a non-paved patio? Do we say that? Or maybe there's a concern for the fact that not all patios are created equal, right? There are cracks in them. They're different areas. Also, so
whatever you sweep off the patio is going on to the ground, which could fill in.
Interesting. I hear the concern, but it's almost like taking. So we'll say gzeira, another gzeira. We'll keep building. You know, I wouldn't say we keep building such a concern. The Be'er Halacha does bring down a concern of between tiles and the like, there are dirt, there are cracks. So if I'm sweeping, I could be filling in dirt. Actually, David, to your point, if I'm sweeping, so where am I sweeping? So you're right, the dirt could go off the stoop. It could also go into the cracks on the stoop and fill it in. Right now, none of us really fill in cracks in our driveway with dirt. If your driveway is cracked, well, you get it repaved, right? Okay, I would be personally concerned for sweeping these areas. Not a deck. I think a deck would be okay. But when it comes to a patio or a driveway or the like, it's not clear to me that it should be okay. Because first of all, the cracks, and you might actually be sweeping dirt into those. You could say that's not intentional. Okay. I could hear an argument that's not a problem, but I would say to be concerned for that. Also, patios. Is it true that majority of patios are paved, or some patios people walk out onto you know, maybe the stoop is paved, but then the rest of it isn't, or not properly so. It's not clear that the house that
I think you have to define patio.
Yes, yes.
Because I've been in Kemp Mill, for example, since we live here. Pretty much all patios are concrete.
Right. So that would be a reason to say it's okay, because once majority are concrete, then I don't have to worry about sweeping a non-concrete. But then I would say there's a concern for not all are created equal, that many have cracks and areas which do have dirt or grass in it, and you're ultimately sweeping that as well. As I said, it's not 100% clear to me, but I think I don't think it would be so appropriate to sweep. Argument can be made on Sukkot, on the driveway that becomes your home. I saw such an idea. Well, the driveway, the Sukkot becomes your home. So in your Sukkot, you could sweep the driveway there. It doesn't sound so compelling to me personally, but such a thought is brought down. So ultimately, the answer would be, in one's home, it's okay to sweep. Now, yes, you shouldn't use a straw broom, a broom that is very likely and very easily that the straws can break. But for the brooms that we have today, regular brooms, so that it would be appropriate and totally okay to sweep in our own homes. Now, sports are an extension, or playing ball is an extension of this same concern. The Mishnah Berurah brings this down. And says there's a concern when playing marbles, or really he even brings down kadur, soccer, let's say. There's a concern you're dealing with a flat surface, so you're going to be rolling it over. So it could come to flat, it could come to flatten or fill in holes. And not only that, if you're playing on a surface, you specifically want to flatten the holes. I remember playing soccer as a kid, and in our Chabad field down in Fairfax, there was this mound, which was the pitcher's mound. But when playing soccer, it was a killer, because you'd be running, and all of a sudden there's the hill, and you go up, you fall, you twist your ankle. Happened all the time. I mean, maybe not to better players, but it happened to me. And so there's certainly more of a concern when it comes to playing games.
I was wondering why you became a rabbi.
Yeah, right. Well, I wasn't cut out for professional basketball, despite my height. So when it comes to sports that rely on rolling on the ground, the balls, that is, and if you're not so adept, you as well, but the idea of rolling on the ground, so that would be a concern of filling in or leveling ground. So that's where that gezeira, that rabbinic decree applies. So to play ball on Shabbos, soccer, kickball, marbles, that's the one brought down in halacha. So all of those wouldn't be halachically appropriate to play on Shabbos. Could an argument be made for basketball? So basketball it's done on a paved area, right? Basketball can't really be played. I mean, it can be played on non-paved, but it's played on courts. But do you want a flat ground? You know, it goes both ways. And again, and I'm not talking about the hashgafic concerns and the other discussions about should a person play ball on Shabbos. Adults, I think we can understand it wouldn't be appropriate. But the question would be, even for kids, what ages, teenagers, but if they don't play ball, which maybe isn't so ideal, but they'll be doing other things, you know, that's not under this discussion. From a purely halachic discussion, basketball would seemingly be better. And football would also be okay, because we're not talking about the idea of rolling anything on the ground. So it wouldn't be included within this direct gezeira, this rabbinic decree of mash v'gumos, of coming to flatten out or shape land. So that's as far as the halakhic considerations. I'm just trying to think if there's any other aspects. Okay, so and I think that also answers our questions. Should I encourage the children to play something else? Well, yes, they shouldn't be playing soccer on dirt.
You know,
but
coming from a different age like me, I knew people who used to play marbles.
Okay.
And basically, you were dealing with, you had to get the marble into a depression in the ground. So there was a an imperative that there be depressions in the ground.
See, even worse.
You don't have that with, let's say, soccer.
No, but over there the concern is, first of all, the rolling itself can cause the, what's it called, the filling in the divots or the like, or more perhaps a person doesn't really want to play on such uneven ground. By the way, to play marbles or to play something on a table or on something else, on a carpeted floor or the like, so that would be okay because the gzeira, the rabbinic decree, was not extended to other objects like that. Okay, so I think that leaves us for now. One idea, when we talk about sports and everything, again, this is not to say a halachic psak, this is not to give a ruling for anyone in any particular case, but there is an interesting discussion when it comes to sports on Shabbos that the Yerushalmi says, and it's brought down the Medrash Eicha, that there was a certain city that was destroyed because they played ball on Shabbos. Now, what does that mean to... we don't need to get into that, and it's not exactly clear, because, again, the halachic aspects we understand, we can deal with, and assuming that there were no halachic issues, what's the concept? But Rav Pinkus talks about this, and Rav Pinkus says Shabbos is a Yom Menucha. Shabbos is a day of rest. What does rest mean? So I think of, a person might think of rest as, well, not working anymore. And whatever a person does to relax and lay, turn on the TV, watch some sports, whatever, read a book, whatever it is. But that's not what Hashem meant when he says menucha. When Hashem says menucha, he means menuchas emes, menuchas ava, menuchas nedava, as we say in mincha, true menucha, true rest. Because the purpose of rest on Shabbos is not just to, lay back and relax and no more work. In fact, Hashem created Shabbos even before Adam, even before man even worked. Man didn't work, and the concept of menucha, rest, existed in the world, right? If it was all to address, lay back, relax, you work too hard, so that wouldn't have applied the first Shabbos. So the idea of true menucha, Rav Pinkus explains, and it's brought down in other sources, is resting and being able to reattach ourselves to the source of a life, to reattach ourselves to Hashem. It's the idea to be able to have moments where we're not so tired, we're not so busy in the flood of life, where we're not so busy with all the stresses, everything going on in the world around us, and to be able to sit down and reconnect and reestablish that Hashem runs the world, that Hashem runs our lives. That's true menucha, that's true rest. And by the way, when a person can realize that Hashem runs my life, Hashem runs the world, so that actually gives a much more, a larger sense of inner peace and helps with the inner turmoil and anxieties and stresses in life. And so the realization, sitting down with that, actually leads to the truest menucha of all, which is the ability to be able to say, okay, everything is in Hashem's hands. So when we talk about the ball and these and all the different ideas on Shabbos, again, it all depends on the case and the kid and the family. But ultimately, we can't lose sight of the fact that it's not just, a day of, okay, I'll rest and I'll enjoy what I enjoy. But it's a day to try to take opportunity to figure out what can I do to help reconnect myself and realize that Hashem is running the world. And that's menucha semes. That's menucha. As we say at the in Shabbos Mincha, she'akiru v'necha of Yedu, that we want that Hashem, we want that our menucha, our rest, is one that we recognize. That we recognize that we're doing it to be able to reconnect to Hashem, because Hashem knows that, but we want to be able to recognize that. Okay, thank you everyone for coming. And again, if there are any other questions, we can follow up. And Mirtz Hashem, I think next week we'll start a new malacha.